calling me Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Is there no sweeter sound than that of your own name, buried in cheers and applause? I think not. It's been a good year. This is episode 157. We started the year at episode 59. Then in February, I launched the spinoff, Sinner's Sunday. So that's 98 episodes plus another dozen bonus episodes for a grand total of 110 episodes. This year. That's over 35 hours of content. I hope you heard and enjoyed them all. And if not, I've got a little sampler for you today. The term best of is kind of elastic, isn't it? What I think was best, you might not. And in a body of work that large, I've probably excluded some things I should have included. But before each segment, I'll let you know which episode it was from. So if you want more, you can find it easily at thatlarryshow.com. Thanks for listening. Triple thanks to those of you who support this show. And if you'd like to step up and join the dojo and help keep the lights on here, now would be as good a time as any. Go to patreon.com/thatlarryshow. We're starting off with a cut from episode 91, when saying, I'm sorry means, fuck you. The story says that school officials said a child built a toy gun out of Legos. And they called police when the kid started pointing the gun at other kids. I wonder how that call went down.
911, what's your emergency?
Hello, police. Hello, this is the Jepson Magnet School, and I want to report a student with a weapon.
What kind of weapon?
A Lego weapon.
What kind of weapon?
A Lego weapon.
You mean those little plastic blocks and Fiesta colors?
Yes, that's correct.
All right, try to stay calm. We'll be right out.
Hurry.
Do you wonder how the cops felt responding to that call? Did they tell the kid to drop the weapon and get on his knees with his hands on his head? Did they cuff him? Did they kick the Lego away and then check to be sure it wasn't loaded? Is it possible that there was anything happening in New Haven at that time that might have been more worthy of police attention? Like, maybe a robbery, rape, arson, stuff like that. This is from episode 87, Give Me Danger. Our world has gone nuts with a safety obsession.
Your attention, please. For your safety, please do not run. Running is not safe. Do not run. Thank you for your cooperation. This is for your safety. You may return to your normal activities if they are safe.
That is the soundtrack of 21st century America, is it not? We're locked in the safety zone. And it's a fucking bore. Safe toys, safe cars, safe food, safe schools, safe roads, safe internet, safe deposit box, safe swimming, safe power tools, safe kitchen utensils, safe downloads, safe jogging, safe eyewear, safe cookware, safe cosmetics, safe drugs, safe sex, safe shopping, safe viewing, safe dating. Newsflash! No matter how fucking safe you are, you're still gonna die. So my daughter's school has just banned running during recess due to safety concerns. How about that, huh? Safety concerns. Well, yeah, while running, kids sometimes do stumble and fall. Might get a scraped knee, maybe a sprained or broken wrist. Doubtless, some kids have died while running. Maybe their hearts gave out or they ran into traffic or whatever. Running is not 100% safe. So we better just ban it. Anyway, there's probably an app for running. Just let the kiddies fire up the iPad, stroke it with a pudgy finger, and watch somebody else run. Some crazy daredevil who doesn't understand about safety. Then have a few donuts and watch some more. Wonder why there's a national obesity crisis. I love to fish. This happened while on a boat off the Jersey Shore. Some crazy old nut was swilling booze from an Anison bottle all day. And as the gulls followed the boat home, this is how the journey ended. Episode 113, A Fish Story. I sat down to have a beer and watch the gulls wheeling. The Anison drinking geezer had his mammoth tackle box open and was laughing to himself as usual. His fingers were very busy. I'm wondering what the hell he's doing. He's got about 18 inches of line and a couple of hunks of bunker, and he's baiting a hook. I figure he must have been slugging Wild Turkey 101, and he's so hammered he doesn't realize that fishing is over. He looks up and smiles at me. Many teeth were missing. Then he starts twirling the baited hook like a keychain and throws it into the air. That's when I realize what the sick fuck was doing. He had a baited hook on each end of the line, and now one gull swoops down and gobbles the bait, and the other one gets the other hook, and they fly in tandem for about 3 seconds, and one peels off, and you see its gullet and tongue come out of its beak, and he tumbles downward to drown, and the other one flies off with a hook in his belly and a length of line with the first gull's guts dangling from it. The geezer can't stop laughing, and he calls out,
"Die, you greedy motherfuckers!"
Then he went back to his Anison bottle. I went inside to take a leak and ponder what a cruel, sick world it could be and how filled it is with batshit crazy assholes. Sure, there's a war on men, but not just men. Boys, too. This is from episode 109. Why am I talking about this? Because of a news story I saw recently about a t-shirt or a pajama top and this shitstorm around this t-shirt because it said, "Boys will be boys." And a bunch of assholes found those words offensive. The biggest asshole happened to be an Australian female. Hey, question. Why are women rarely referred to as assholes? Why is that? Seems like only guys are called assholes. So in the interest of sexual equality, we never say gender here, we're going to call an asshole, whether male or female. If they can ban a t-shirt that says "boys will be boys," how about they replace it with one that says "women can be assholes too"? Wonder how well that would sell. The asshole was in a department store and saw the shirt and found it offensive. She claims that the phrase is a blanket excuse for unacceptable male behavior. What behavior would that be? Running around like a little kid? Playing in the dirt? Maybe forming a hand in the shape of a pistol and saying bang bang. According to this asshole, let's see, what's her name? Oh yeah, her name is Bridie Harris. Bridie saw the shirt and then posted this on the manufacturer's Facebook page.
"Boys won't be boys. Boys will be held accountable for their actions."
Boys won't be boys. What the fuck does that even mean? If they won't be boys, what will they be? Tuna fish? Avocado? What a moronic statement. Next.
"Boys will be held accountable for their actions."
Ooh, spoken like an authoritarian. Bridie's laying it down. She's the big boss lady, and what she says goes. Right up her ass. Because boys are children, aren't they? Maybe not to Bridie. If they've got testicles and a penis, They're accountable. Same as an adult man. Time. It's the only non-renewable resource. Come warp it with me in episode 72. Time. It may be the single most elastic word in the entire language. Anyone from another land trying to grasp the near infinite usages and idioms of time would just go nuts, wouldn't they? If someone achieves a great honor or milestone, they'll say, "This is your time." But if that same guy gets hit by a cement truck the next day, they'll say, "It was his time." Unless he's younger, then they'll say, "He went before his time." We have good times, bad times, hard times, wild times, time out. People tell us to be on time and then remind us if we're not by saying, "It's time." But we might answer, "I need more time." And hopefully they'll say, "You have time," or "Take your time," and not, "Time's up." A good comic has great timing. A shitty drummer or a broken clock cannot keep time. We better be ready when it's game time, and after the game, it's Miller time. Who's going to win next week's game? Well, time will tell. Why do we play games? To have a good time. Our culture is obsessed with time. From Roman sundials to the atomic clock, everybody needs to know exactly what time it is. Except those rabbits in Alice in Wonderland, they got a busted pocket watch which is running exactly 2 days slow. Some places are like that. New York runs 2 days fast, and L.A. runs 2 days slow, and in Chicago, you need to run faster than the bullets. At the mill or the factory, there's a time clock, which is redundant. If not a time clock, what the hell would it be? A space clock? Isn't that what Einstein postulated with his theory of relativity? And what's that time clock for? So management knows not only where you are, but when you are. So what do we crave? Time for ourselves, time on my own, a little extra time, an eighth day of the week, a 25th hour. If time isn't flying, it's dragging. You're either out of time or got time in your hands. The dumbest one of all is, I'm killing time. Fuck no, amigo. Time's killing you. And me, and everybody. It's the one and only resource that is neither renewable nor sustainable.
Tomorrow is another day.
Yeah, another day to be subtracted from the 25,000 days in an average lifespan. 25,000 really isn't a lot of anything. Time can be a lever, a weapon, right? When somebody is jailed, they're doing time. If it's a long sentence or some federal hellhole like that Supermax one in Colorado, where you're locked up 23 hours a day, well, that's hard time. Maybe they should rechristen that one hell time. Sure, they take your freedom, but if it's not a life sentence, you can get that back. But that time they take from you, that's gone forever. Then there's the more general non-prison hard times, usually economic misery, as opposed to, "Hey, don't give me a hard time here." Kids are really good at giving parents a hard time. The very word time can somehow confer authority, right? Time Magazine, the New York Times, the Chicago Sun-Times, but it's nearly their time, isn't it? Newspapers and magazines are already dead. They're just too stupid or arrogant to lie down. And when they all fold, which they will people say, "It was time's time"? Imagine if we could sit in a room and see time, our time, encased in packing crates, and the crates would hold exactly the amount of time we spent doing one thing or another, and be clearly marked with a Sharpie, boxes saying school, work, sleep, sick, hangover, partying, friends, traffic, learning, achieving, television, porn, Facebook, Twitter, Grand Theft Auto, Call of Duty, Minecraft. How would all those boxes compare? What would be their proportions? When you looked at them, would they make you proud or fill you with regret? There might be more nuts in Hollywood than anywhere else. Run away with me to the Psycho Circus in episode 103. Hollywood is a festering petri dish of bacteria where a mere handful of truly creative people are hosts for legions of talentless parasites made of equal parts ambition, greed, and malevolence. Yes, you can quote me on that. So Hollywood, the place, is, of course, a few landmark structures, the Chinese theater, and a few lesser-known ones, the Egyptian, the Pantages, the Mayan, the Dolby, the site of the yearly televised group masturbation party, the Oscars. And there's the truly depressing Walk of Fame, which meanders through it like some grimy yellow brick road. Except the yellow is a river of human piss from all the druggies and derelicts. You don't have to walk far to see small islands within that river, piles of human shit. I've never gotten the Hollywood Walk of Fame thing. There are over 2,600 stars on that walk of alleged fame. Most of the names you've never heard of. Fans of stars have little clubs they form to keep their stars clean of undignified debris and feces. They maintain them with mops and buckets and scrub brushes and metal polish. But that's gotta be a losing battle. I wonder if some of the defecating derelicts have favorite stars they like to use as toilets. I bet they do.
Hey, Artie, where you going?
I'm taking a star dump.
George Clooney again?
Man, that was yesterday. I'm gonna leave a mess on Deborah Messing.
You are more likely to be killed taking a selfie than eaten by a shark. Here's a cut from episode 89. Kill your selfie. Maybe that's the next big Shark Tank product. Safety selfie sticks. They scan the scene and evaluate the danger of the jackass holding the stick and then sound off like this.
Warning, you are not safe. Step away from the animal. You are in danger. Get the fuck away from that bear, you moron.
We definitely need more realistic verbal prompts for all our devices, don't we? Like these assholes who decide to climb into the back seat and take a nap while hurtling down the freeway in their so-called self-driving Teslas.
Hey fuckball, get back in the driver's seat and take the wheel. You are a fucking imbecile. You think owning a six-figure car makes you smart? It does not. Idiot.
I had my own little dust-up with a Pachyderm when I was a very small kid. The old man took my brother and me to the zoo. I don't recall which one. Central Park, Bronx Zoo? I don't know. I've never been real big on zoos. Not too much fun for the animals, right? And there's such a star-fucky hierarchy among them. First you have to look at all this stupid shit like sloths and anteaters and springboks and wildebeests, and then, of course for kids, bigger is better. Maybe you see a hippo or a rhino or a giraffe. And of course the chimps, but the real attractions are the lions, tigers, gorillas, and elephants. They should probably just send all the other animals back. Does anybody really give a shit about them? Now at that zoo at the time, they weren't so careful about separating the people from the animals. The elephants were behind big iron bars, just like convicts, and the zoo actually sold peanuts you could feed to them. Well, of course, the old man bought us a couple of bags. And I was so small, 3 or 4 at most, I had to reach upward to hand the elephant the peanuts. I tried this a couple of times. I'd reach up with peanuts in my fist, and then when I opened my hand, they'd fall to the ground. This was frustrating me as much as the elephant. So on attempt number 3, the elephant just sucked my arm up his trunk, right to the elbow. Holy shit. And I fucking screamed, and my old man grabbed me and violently yanked me back, and my arm popped out of his trunk with a sound like a champagne cork. And now it was glistening with elephant snot, and Dad ran me to the men's room to wash it off. It was a shitty public sink with one of those faucets about an inch and a half long. You can barely get your hands wet in those goddamn sinks. And getting my arm scrubbed was not easy. He was slapping soap on it from the dispenser and then cupping water in his hand to rinse it. And the whole time, I'm screaming like I'm in mid-amputation with no anesthesia. And my older brother is laughing at me, which makes me scream even more. And of course, pisses off the old man. I don't recall how much longer we stayed at the zoo. I'll bet Dad was glad he didn't have to bring home a one-armed kid that evening. What happens when Chi-Coms buy a Mexican radio station to blast propaganda into SoCal? Find out here in episode 117, Alice Cooper, Commies, and Closure. China just cut a deal with a Mexican radio station near Tijuana, and they're going to be splashing commie propaganda across Southern California to the estimated 600,000 Chinese folks living in the region. To what end, you have to wonder? Like those people are going to hear that shit and unload their swimming pool homes and BMWs at fire sale prices so they can run back to Beijing for smog, scarcity, and oppression. I wonder what communist Chinese propaganda sounds like. I used to get down in Miami a lot, and you could hear Radio Havana booming across the Caribbean. Every fucking paragraph began with
Los Imperialistas Estados Unidos.
Maybe the whole thing will blow up. Maybe the CIA will set up competing transmitting towers pointed at Mexico and pump in nothing but this 24/7.
Feelings. Fuck your feelings.
All my life I'll feel it.
Fuck your feelings.
I wish I'd never met you, girl.
Fuck your feelings.
It would make all the PC thought police happy by encouraging feelings. Have you noticed there's a war on fun? The Under Armour Corporation is leading the charge. This is from episode 141. Say goodbye to strip clubs. That's what I mean by compiling a glossary of all the words these lying Marxist shitbags use to get their way. So I'm going to start this glossary right here with the statement from the CEO of Under Armour, this Kevin Plank guy. And as I read it, I'm going to sound two alarms for certain words. Words that are either deceptive bullshit, or dog whistles. Of course, real dog whistles are silent, so we'll just use that referee's whistle instead. Ready? Here we go. This is his statement. Our teammates...
Bullshit.
No, that was not a mistake. In this context, teammates is bullshit. Dodger pitcher Clayton Kershaw and shortstop Corey Seager are teammates, right? If they get in a beef, can Seager fire Kershaw? Fuck no. They're teammates. The people who work for Kevin Plank at Under Armour are not teammates. They're employees. Stop the bullshit, Kevin. I went off on similar bullshit way back in episode 9. Larry destroys Disneyland. They call their employees cast members. Isn't that cute? Hey, don't cast members have lines from a script, right? What lines does the guy who mops the toilet have,
Have a nice shit, sir.
And in that episode, I was furious because the same PC hags who were so pissed about strip club visits were furious about Princess Jasmine's sexy genie pants and crop top. So they demanded she cover up. And of course, Disney immediately acquiesced. Their demands had nothing to do with Jasmine's outfit being too skimpy. Any chick on a beach shows way, way more skin, even in a one-piece. It was simply about women who looked at Jasmine and thought, that trim and toned bitch reminds me that I look like shit. So I'm going to complain and make it about decency and role models and anorexia and every other lie I can dream up. And now, the Jasmine cast members at Disneyland walk around in outfits that cover everything but faces and hands. So Mr. Under Armour goes on to say, our teammates deserve to work in a respectful and empowering environment.
Bullshit.
Now there's a twofer from Kevin, huh? Respectful and empowering. Both words are so overused by PC types, it's mind-numbing. Respectful is a dog whistle for political correctness. If the goon in the next cubicle lays down a smokescreen of lingering farts every afternoon after lunching on raw goat's milk and fish heads, you're supposed to respect him, his culture, his cuisine, and his farts. Just because you feel like you're going to vomit doesn't give you the right to hurt someone's feelings. And empowering, that's been the word du jour for years now. Empowering has replaced opportunities, hasn't it? To take advantage of an opportunity through hard work and ingenuity and then rise through the corporate ranks, that's real self-empowerment. But just handing somebody power, what the fuck is that? How about giving them responsibility? That cuts both ways. But empowerment? Meaningless dog whistle bullshit. If you're empowering one person, or one group, or one class over another, then at the same time, aren't you disempowering somebody else? Usually. Empowerment is a dog whistle euphemism that says, we play identity politics. Now here's where Plank goes off the rails with the PC speak. We believe that there is systemic inequality
Bullshit.
In the global workplace.
Bullshit.
And we
Bullshit.
Will embrace this moment
Bullshit.
To accelerate the
Bullshit.
Ongoing meaningful
Bullshit.
Cultural transformation
Bullshit.
That is already underway at Under Armour. We can and will do better.
Bullshit.
Oh, Jesus, where to begin? Systemic inequality in the global workplace. Well, very few Under Armour garments are American made. Most are produced in Vietnam, India, China, Indonesia, and Honduras. How much do you figure they're paying those team members? Do they get medical benefits and pensions? 401k? Is that the global inequality to which Kevin Plank is referring? Then he says we will embrace the moment. Embrace is a total dog whistle that means comply. The word that embrace replaced was tolerance. And I'm okay with that word. I might not enjoy it when the guy next door plays Taylor Swift at his barbecue party. But maybe he doesn't enjoy my music. We have to tolerate each other. That's how things work. But embrace says, whatever the fuck it is, you have to wrap your arms around it and hug it close and breathe it in and lick it like you love it. Embrace may be the single most insidious word in the entire PC Marxist vocabulary. Nobody has to embrace a goddamn thing if they don't want to. But that's not the way the thought, behavior, and speech police see it. You know, I'm actually getting nauseated reading Plank's statement. What's meaningful cultural transformation mean? What that means is, hey, team member, we're going to shove our Marxist rules for living and thinking down your throat and up your ass, and if you don't embrace them, well, we'll transfer you to Team Unemployed. At dusk, on a desert road, I met an incredible, hot, and pointy chick. She drove a vintage convertible T-Bird and drove me to madness. This is from bonus episode 17, Neon in the Desert Night. I'm in serious lust. She's pointy. She's hot. She's witty. She's fun. She's stunning. She's confident. Is she a mirage? The hours race by, and soon I realize we're the last ones left in the joint. The gink in the tux unplugged his Korg and disappeared an hour ago. I have a reservation at a Marriott about a half hour away. The waitress brings a check. I pay it. Will Jessica follow me to my hotel? We leave the restaurant. A wind has kicked up, and now it's blowing pretty good in that parking lot. She wants to show me her car. It sits gleaming under a light. She opens the driver's door for me, and I slide behind the wheel. This is going to be one of the great adventures of my life. Nothing you could get on an ocean or a lake or a mountain retreat. No, this is a desert adventure. So mesmerizing, it's surreal. I sink into the bucket seat and grip the big wheel. She tells me I look good behind that wheel. Why don't I take her for a spin? She walks around to the passenger side. As she opens the door, she gasps. She's staring at the windshield wiper. Looks like a parking ticket tucked under it, but not the usual rectangle of paper. No, this is more like a sheaf of paper. Oh, it's like torn out of a notebook. She says, "Jesus fucking Christ," and then hands the paper to me. Scrawled on it, in a disturbed hand, were the words, "Bitch, I know where you are, who you are with, and can kill you whenever I want." I scan the lot, ask her if she sees him anywhere. She says no. I ask if we should call the cops. She says no, this isn't the first time, and she already has a restraining order on him. She looks like she might cry, but she stifles it. She comes back around to the driver's side, opens the door. My cue to exit. I stand. She kisses me. She tells me she has to go, and that she'll call me, and we'll connect when she's in L.A. She gets into the T-Bird and fires it up. In a matter of seconds, she's a red dot on the horizon. That's all, folks. Hope you enjoyed it. Happy fucking New Year, and take no shit.